Coming up today on the show, I will update the Seahawks' top 30 visit list. There is a clear trend emerging. Are they tipping their hand on which way they're going to go in the first round? I'll detail that. And then we're going to nerd out on the draft some more. Patton Richard used to contribute to Field Goals. He does a top 150 every year, puts a ton of work into it, breaks it into levels and layers and tiers by position group. So we're going to take a look at his updated top 150 board, get his thoughts on what the Seahawks might do and some of his favorite prospects as well. We're going to nerd out on the draft again, coming up today on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now here's your host, Dan Viens.
If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel if you would. And if you hit the bell button, you will never miss a notification of new episodes, of which there are many these days and will continue to be so. If you prefer audio podcasts, subscribe wherever you get your audio podcasts. And if you want to listen to episodes exclusive to you ad-free, you can subscribe for a monthly fee on Spotify. That link will be in the description. Or you can just buy me a coffee or a beer, as Josh just did. Bought me 6 beers. Really appreciate the support. Patton Richard coming up in just a second, but I wanted to show you what I have so far. And this may not be official, because some of these don't get reported. Some of them are done through some sleuthing tactics. There's one Twitter account that does a really good job of combing through Instagram and finding when players post pictures. And one of the things the Seahawks do is they take each top 30 visit guy to Lumen Field, and they have up on the LED screens their name and welcoming them to the city and to the stadium. And these are important visits. They are to learn more about the prospect than maybe you've had a chance to before. Maybe you didn't get a chance to meet with them at the combine because those visits are limited, or you wanted to find out even more to just kind of confirm your grade on that player so far. Or they might be players in many cases that weren't invited to the combine that you're looking at later in the draft. But this year, I think more than ever, the Seahawks are looking at some of the top prospects in this draft and bringing them out to Seattle. And I wanted to just kind of share that with you and update it based on all the sources I've been able to glean so far, because you can see, as I said in the intro, a clear pattern here. The way I have this laid out, names on the left, their position, I've got it sorted by position. If they have a blue box next to their name, the team met with them as one of their official 18-minute combine interviews. The green box means that they are reported to have or are having, or will have, a meeting here in Seattle with the team as one of their 30 visits. And as you scroll down, look at these position groups as you look at the green boxes. We've got 3 defensive tackles, 3 edge players, 2 linebackers, 1 offensive tackle reported yesterday, Matt Goncalves of Pittsburgh, really interesting dude that probably projects to guard. The quarterbacks, of course, Bo Nix, John Rhys Plumlee, Spencer Rattler reported yesterday as coming in for a visit. Cameron Kinchins, the first safety on the list, reported. Theo Johnson, the only tight end. And then Malachi Corley, the wide receiver, and Travis Glover, another offensive tackle prospect. So just about every one of these, overwhelmingly outside of the quarterback position, Seahawks looking hard at front 7. No cornerbacks reported to be coming in for a 30 visit yet. It's fascinating to me. I think it does indicate the direction they may be headed, because especially when you look at the names. Look at this, Byron Murphy out of Texas, a guy that's been a mock draft favorite of mine for a long time. They took one of their formal spots at the combine and used it on him and are bringing him out to Seattle. Double dipping on that one. Same with Jared Verse, the big edge out of Florida State. Met with him formally at the combine, still bringing him out to Seattle. And as reported, I believe by Ian Rapoport, it was a 2-day visit. He was here for 2 days. So clearly that's a guy that they like and want to spend more time with. Just thought I would kind of update you on that. I'll post that on Twitter as well. You can follow me there at Seahawks Forever. But I want to get into this conversation with Patton Richard and look at his top 150 board and kind of break down sort of compile a whole bunch of thoughts and philosophies that I've been talking about on this show for a couple of weeks. Really cool to speak with someone else who lays it out this way and lets you see in a visual manner kind of what we're talking about in opportunity cost and that whole concept. If you take a guy early, where does that leave you in regards to other positions of need later on relative to the strength and the pockets in this draft? Here's my conversation earlier today with Patton Richard. Hey, Patton, we've been talking about getting together and having you on the show for a while now, especially since you put out your top 150. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here.
I want to start with this. Let's talk about your process. Okay? When does it begin for you? And then is this your view of just how you view these prospects and how much you like these prospects in a vacuum? Or is it how much you think the Seahawks will like them? How do you balance that out?
Yeah. So for me, this is how much I think the Seahawks will like them, kind of with how I view them, right? So I don't watch the draft for everyone else. I'm purely just for the Seahawks. And so when I'm looking at all of the players and how they fit, the past 10 years, it's been pretty easy to figure out who Seattle may like and who they may not. And this is completely different. So this year, it's a little more of what I think about them, but also through a Seahawks lens of the rankings. And how I get started on this is I'm actually a college football nerd first, more so than NFL. And so I watch as much college football as I can intake. And so I've been playing college fantasy football since 2005 when
we started
doing it in Excel, where we'd email back and forth. The rosters of my 2005 season are crazy. I had like Marshawn Lynch and Darren McFadden and Ray Rice as my three running backs, right? Yeah. And so it's just like, that's where I get my first insight into these. So I'm not usually surprised by a lot of the NFL draft hype for a lot of these players. Like, I've watched most of these, especially the offensive players, for years. And then the defensive players, I know from just intaking a lot of college football, but then I have to kind of change my prism of how I view them.
I'm going to put this on the screen for those of you watching on YouTube, and understanding that it's a spreadsheet. It's going to be a little small, might be hard for some of you to see it, but I just wanted to put it up as a reference. And this is what I love, this format. This is the horizontal board. This is the way the teams do it, essentially. When you catch glimpses sometimes in the war room of those whiteboards in the back that they blur out, that's how these are set up, by tiers of spots and levels. And you hear John Schneider refer to them as cliffs and ledges, and then it's by position, right? So it's when you hear them talk about value and whether they're thinking about dropping back, this kind of gives you a visual picture of where they view the position groups at different levels of the draft that they'd be comfortable taking them. I want to start in a general sense. So you've got your top, you go top 8, then 16, then 32, 48, 64, 100, 150. So it's not by round necessarily, it's by tiers. And so assuming, let's start with this scenario first. Assuming, and by the way, did you go 16 because the Seahawks pick at 16 this year, or is that where you usually do the cutoff?
So because the Seahawks pick at 16, I wanted it to be easy for when the pick is up, who was left in my top 16 tier that I would prefer. And generally, I call those buckets, right? The horizontal bucket. And so the goal in each of your picks is hopefully a person in the bucket before where you're picking. And given how much I anticipate Seattle to move around and how much they move around in general, I try not to do just their pick, because it might be 20 picks later, it might be earlier. So who knows? So I found it helped being 16 to bucket it, just because everything kind of worked by eights this way. So
let's start there. If, based on this list, right, and who you think might be available, and there's a bunch of names there in that second tier that the Seahawks have met with. There's even names in that first tier that they've met with or are meeting with. At this point, looking at your board and what you know about how this draft breaks down, is your preference for them to move down again? Or are there guys that you would stick and pick?
So every single time I envision a stick and pick scenario, I hate it at the end. Just I feel like I'm missing out on the meat of the draft, which to me, it hurts to lose the second round pick in the Leonard Williams trade, obviously. But when you look at the top 48 and top 64, like where the meat is, obviously wide receiver, which I'll talk about a little bit later, I think is a sneaky need for Seattle.
Absolutely.
But especially the defensive tackles, there's just so many that have different skill sets that any of them, like literally any of them could be great fits for Seattle. And I think we're just going to miss out on that entire bunch. Right. And, yeah. And without the second rounder, we might miss out on linebacker as well, which is not a sneaky need. It's a real need for the Seahawks right. going forward. So I think this draft, when you look at it, you have to think of it as their goal is not to fill all of their needs in this draft. They've kind of telegraphed to us that this is at least a 2-year plan by taking the Jamal Adams hit all at once mm-hmm. and everything. So when I'm viewing my customers, it's a I got an alert right there for work. When I'm viewing my my board, I'm viewing like where the pockets are and where it's best to maneuver. So there's not, unless one of the top seven, I know the top is a top eight bucket. I think Quinyon Mitchell is my highest rated defensive player. Mm-hmm. If we exclude him, that top seven, those are pretty much the only top seven I would be okay sticking and picking. Otherwise, I definitely want to trade back.
And that's what I like about the horizontal board is you can visualize it. And this is something I've been telling people for weeks, if not months. So much of the fan base is so nervous about the guard position, and rightly so when you look at the roster today, that I've heard this a million times. Absolutely, you have to take a guard in the first round. Have to take a guard in the first round. It's a fireable offense if they don't take a guard in the first round. But you look at this, and if you're watching on YouTube and it's a little difficult to see, so you're in the right in the middle, the sixth column from the left, you can see when you look at interior offensive line, that includes centers and guards, nothing here in your board until the top 48. And then you go Barton, and the top 64 is JPJ. And this is, in case you're wondering, Choi Fatanu, you have in the tackle column. Yeah. And then you get into the top 100. Now you see this group, right? You see eight, you see 15 names there in that same range. And that's why I don't think the Seahawks go guard in the first round for precisely that reason, because it's the opportunity cost. If they love a Graham Barton and they take him at 26 or whatever, then you look down here at the defensive tackles, as you said, edge really drops off, linebacker, certainly after the top few guys. There isn't the combination that you're looking for, right? Before we get into more details about that in the guard position, why do you have Barton so low? You seem to have him lower than the consensus.
Yeah, I think it was just how much I prefer everyone else.
Okay.
My big thing for Barton, I love his flexibility. He could play anywhere. He may even be able to stick at tackle. Honestly, I think he's possibly a Pro Bowl caliber guard. And some people might say, like, well, then why is he in 48, not in top 32 or top 16? I just don't know. I did an analysis on all the guards that have left in the last 5 years, essentially, and almost none of them get paid at the place where they were drafted. Mm. And it made me think about how guards are being drafted high but not being kept, and why are these teams willing to let them go at the price? You know, and guards being drafted later are getting paid. We saw Damian Lewis get paid right now, and so it's to me, I think it's just I value that in comparison of what the draft capital is and what the contract is less than most. So I admit that I'm probably lower, although I saw, I think it was Mel Kiper released a mock today that had JPJ going at like pick 50 or something. I've been pretty solid that to me, he's a second rounder. And when I see all the mocks that have the Seahawks take him in the first, I'm like, oh, every time it hurts me a little bit because he's a pretty common name.
Of that group that you have here, top 100, top 150, just to kind of get fans to start thinking in this direction. If they don't go interior offensive line and check that box early on, who are some of your favorites out of that group that you think could be fits from day one?
Yeah, my absolute favorite is Brandon Coleman. He's out TCU, just like a freak athlete. Like I think he's probably gone by pick 100, but you know, I've seen him as high as like in the 50s. I've seen him after in the 120s. And that's the hard part about setting up a board like this is you don't know exactly where they're going to fall. And each team is different. So I have to think about Seahawks specifically. And so when I think about our guard, I think about how huge Bradford is. And I know he's kind of polarizing. Some people thought he was pretty good and others are like, can't wait to replace him. And so I'm thinking if we have a big guard there, and I think about how much Grubb loves pulling his guards and you know, the gaps that he liked to do. I really like the idea of an athletic offensive lineman next to on the other side. So Brandon Coleman's my favorite, followed by Mace McCormick, also another athlete. I think I saw on the Beast that they have him as a tackle, or maybe it was Coleman as a tackle. I'm starting to forget. I've just been reading the Beast. Dane Brugler released it today. Yeah. So I've been like knee deep in that all day. And so also flexible freak athlete. I think I'm more interested in those kinds of guards right now.
Yeah. And then we got to talk about quarterback because this is, well, it just won't go away. Right. And part of that is on the Seahawks because they keep meeting with these guys. You know, Spencer Rattler was here yesterday. They met with Bo Nix last week. There's obviously the Michael Penix connection. I've talked about that enough on this show for now anyway, so we won't focus there. But when you look down here at the bottom, right, and I thought that the Rattler meeting was interesting because, to me, this quarterback class lacks that second tier, or you could call it a third tier, I suppose, because some people have put Penix and Nix up until now anyway, kind of in that what you would call a second tier. That third tier really lacking in this class. I have fans ask me all the time, like, you know, what do you think about them? Shouldn't they take a Joe Milton or take a guy later on? And my answer to that is, I talked about it at length on the show the other day that gosh, the new practice restrictions in the NFL just make it really tough to develop a quarterback, especially if he's the third guy on your list. There just aren't the reps. And so, you know, those guys that have extensive starting experience and might be able to play early that you're going to get later in a draft, those guys stay in school because they get paid to do so. So I thought the Rattler thing was interesting because he is projected largely as a third round pick, although some people think he might sneak into the second. You have Bo Nix down there right next to him. You have him that low, and it seems to be the trend right now. He seems to be falling in the eyes of all the big board makers and the mock drafters and the analysts. What is it about Bo Nix that gives you pause?
Yeah, so I just want to call out that I cannot, like, in no world do I think Rattler or Bo Nix make it to 150, right? I have them in the top 150. And I think about that as, where would I be happy if the Seahawks drafted them?
Okay.
So it's less to do with like where I think they'll be. And I just literally each player think about if they drafted them here. And sometimes you have to do the calculus of like, well, if they address these other positions earlier, am I happy? You know? And so you have to kind of rank everything in that way. Bo Nix, I have below Rattler just because, Nix is not my favorite kind of quarterback. You know, yes, he's very much on time. I actually think his arm is better than what they show. Like in the Senior Bowl, they had him throw a flea flicker and they wanted him to throw it deep just to see for people to see his arm strength. It's just, maybe I can't get enough Auburn Bo Nix out of my head, but it's one of those things that I've watched Bo Nix for a long time and I don't trust the Oregon offense as much. When I watch it, it's so much behind the line of scrimmage. It's so many dumps and let them run. And I don't know if he has the placement to really attack the edges like I want. Like I have no doubt Rattler has that arm strength. And so for me, if we drafted him with our third round pick, would I be happy? Not after the Howell trade. Like that's just not where I want that. So I have no doubt that he will be taken significantly earlier. But for my Seahawks specific board, I just can't pay the cost that'll take to get him.
And then if they were to go Rattler, which is a concept I can get behind, with a caveat, like I would want that to happen if they trade down and accumulate extra picks. If that's their second pick, they take him at 81 without moving. I'd have a hard time accepting that because of what you mentioned, because after the Howell trade, he's your third guy on the roster, which costs you, you know, the opportunity to use that roster spot on another player. And also, how are you going to develop him? Rattler's tape is tough to evaluate for me because you see the flashes, you see the easy arm talent. Like I love his release. I love how he gets rid of the ball. I call it a confident release. Like he, when he makes a decision to let it go, he lets it go. But also, you know, six starters on an offensive line last year for South Carolina missed time. Pass protection was terrible. He rarely got time to really set his foot and deliver the ball on time. Your evaluation process on Rattler, what makes you think that he'd be a good pro?
Yeah. Just arm talent for days, right? Like, people know about Caleb Williams' arm talent. I throw Michael Penix as having special arm talent to me. The NFL throws that he makes, there's no doubt that Rattler has that. You know, there was a reason why he was highlighted in that Netflix show. What was it called? QB1, I think.
Yeah.
Of boy, he 17. Came off air again, like a pain when he was then. But just he had those expectations, and I think he really got humbled at South Carolina. But we were always wondering, like me and some friends are always like, when's Rattler just going to explode? You know, he's going to have a 7 TD game, you know, he's got, cause he can make every single throw.
Yeah.
And so often quarterback coaches are more of the mindset, like, if we've seen you do it once, we can get it out of you. Right. And if you believe in that, then Rattler is like, I totally understand why teams would take him in the second, because he's shown everything you want. It's just, he makes a lot of bad decisions, like a lot of bad decisions. But how much of that was, like you said, offensive lineman churn? He didn't have a lot of NFL receiver. I mean, he had Leggett this year,
right.
But Marshawn Lloyd transferred. He went to USC. You know, he was at South Carolina before that. He didn't have a lot of weapons. So how much was he putting on himself to do? And like, he's a cocky son of a gun. So like, he may just think he can do it all. Right. And so I really like Rattler. I'm terrified the Rams are going to take him to backup Stafford for a year, and then he can just fill right into that kind of mindset and learn from him. Like, I'm terrified that's what's about to happen.
So. Yeah, he seems like he'd be a real fit in that offense.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go left to right here. Running back is a need that, you know, heading into this draft, most people feel like isn't very high on the priority list, right? We all consider them to be three deep, although we never actually got to see Kenny McIntosh in a regular season game last year, but we know what he did pre-injury in the preseason and what he did at Georgia. And then Bryant Kobach, the fourth running back on their roster. And I think it was going to be a need at minimum in undrafted free agency before he announced his retirement. But now there's only three running backs on the roster. This is an interesting running back class in that there's nobody. Look at your board. That's kind of what I'm seeing. Although I'll see a kind of a rogue mock every once in a while where they have a certain running back going higher than anybody else. It's not a bad group. There's some really interesting guys in this group, right? But as far as Seahawk fits go, and what you think they might be looking for to kind of, you know, fill the void left by DJ Dallas, who are some guys that stand out to you?
Yeah. So if you're looking, I don't think anybody wants the Seahawks to take a running back early. Like, we've all suffered through that discourse. And luckily this draft doesn't have that.
The joke is that we don't have a second round pick. So we can't take a running back in the second round.
Oh man. If we took one in the third though, people would still riot. Especially if they didn't touch guard yet. So for me, again, this is not where I think they'll go. This is where I would be happy if Seattle drafted them. So I expect, you know, there's lots of rumors about Jonathan Brooks staying in Texas, Dallas, in the second round pick. There's lots of Braylon Allen love. Like, if you look at my top four running backs, Trey Benson, out of Kansas State, Jalen Wright, or excuse me, he was at Kansas State. He transferred to Florida State.
Yeah.
What's the other way? Yep. And then Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. Those are kind of my two favorite. And then the next two, Jonathan Brooks and Braylon Allen. Braylon Allen is just like a truck, man. Yeah, you see that guy. I don't think any of them are going to become Seahawks, right? Like, I would love that, but I just don't see the pocket of like where I think we will be prioritizing running back and where I think they'll end up. So we actually have to go off the board out of my 150 to get who I think they may be targeting, right? Tyrone Tracy out of Purdue is the converted wide receiver who's now a running back who's getting a lot of love. There's Isaac Arendo, who was at Wisconsin backing up Braylon Allen, who transferred to Louisville and is just like blew up the combine with his athletic testing. Like, people don't make people like him very often.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think it's going to be more of a skill set dependent. And I don't know what they're looking for. Are they looking for a better blocker? Could I imagine them getting Dylan Johnson in an undrafted role? Because he's probably seventh or undrafted from Washington, knows grub and knows the offense. And he didn't test while he's still recovering from injury. Like, I have no idea how they're going to prioritize, but I do think they're going to leave the draft with one.
I could see them using their seventh round pick, or if they accumulate others, the seventh round, because, you know, that's when the real undrafted recruiting starts to happen and the scouts start to burn up the phones. And if you're going to be an undrafted running back and you're looking at rosters, you're looking for opportunity, you might look at the Seahawks roster and go, geez, that's a tough room to break. Yeah, right.
Totally.
And so then if there's a guy you really like, you don't think you're going to get him, you can use that pick to take the decision out of his hands. Right. So
yeah, exactly.
You called wide receiver a sneaky need. I have said that it's more than that and have been telling people to get ready. They're going to take a receiver at some point in this draft, maybe earlier than you think. And then they go out and they sign Laviska Shenault. I kind of maybe backed off that a little bit, you know, because that receiver room's pretty deep. But the concept that you don't always just draft for today, you draft for the future too, is one that's lost on some people. It's, you know, you have two receivers that have your two of your biggest cap hits on the roster. One's on the wrong side of 30, right? You know, you've got Jake Bobo is considered sort of the consensus fourth. He's limited in what he can do. Receiver's always a need, isn't it? Especially with nowadays college football, you call yourself a college football nerd. You know, it used to be thought that it takes receivers, in fact, Schneider used to say this all the time, it takes receivers longer than other position groups to really acclimate to the pros. Not the case anymore. These guys are coming out every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And every year is going to be a good NFL, a good wide receiver draft. Like I it's not going to stop next year. It's probably just going to keep going. So I understand why some wouldn't want to spend it early on them. Like I have Brian Thomas in my top 16, meaning like theoretically, if we take him at 16 and we can't, I say we, like I'm on the team, like Seattle can't trade back. I'd be okay with it because I think he's that level. Right. I just, when I look at the long-term plan of the Seahawks, I think, okay, next year it's possible that we only have two wide receivers under contract, right? You think about this is DK's going to go in next year. So let's talk after this year. DK's going into the last year of his deal. Mm-hmm. Tyler Lockett, there was already rumors of retirement being done, you know, so cut to save $17 million, also an option. And then other than that, we would just have JSN and Bobo. And literally that's it.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's likely, but is it impossible that DK holds out for a new extension? Is it possible that DK doesn't like the offense and asks for a trade to get that extension next year? Like all of that seems possible to me. And then we have Eskridge and we have Chenault both on 1 year prove it deals. And I think they're kind of fighting for one roster spot between them. And so to me, it is a need. It's not like a huge priority need. I'm probably not prioritizing the wide receiver, you know, unless it's a bucket above of where we're picking, I'm probably not choosing a wide receiver unless the value's there.
It's fascinating because, you know, they've only met with two or among their 30 visits anyway. Malachi Corley is one. You've got him in your top 64. And then there was another one that his name's escaping me. There's a hyphenated name, but he was more of a kick returner type, more of a specialist. They haven't met with, you know, even Corley's kind of a gadget. There's been Debo Samuel comps, probably a slot guy. They haven't really met with any outside guys. How much you can glean for that, you know, you don't know because there is some chess being played here as well sometimes with some of these visits and they don't like to give away their hand. Yeah. Tight end is fascinating. It's not as good a class, certainly, as last year's class, where you could find starters in almost every round. There's, you know, once you get down to your top 100 and 150, there's some nice players, kind of some two-way tight ends, jack of all trades, master of none types. But you got Brock Bowers in your top 16, and this has become kind of a fan favorite. Like, if Seahawks stick at 16 and take Brock Bowers because he's far and away the highest guy on their board, I can understand the process, but given that they just paid $21 million to Noah Fant, presumably to feature him more, and then you go out in free agency and bring a guy in who's more of a blocker in Farrell Brown, I would see this as a point of opportunity cost. Sell me on the idea of Brock Bowers potentially being the pick at 16 if that were to happen.
Man, like he does everything well. There's not a single part of his game that he does poorly. You know, they handed the ball off to him. They ran reverses to him at Georgia, where they have a plethora of weapons. They can do anything they want. And the games that Bowers was not 100%, like you could feel that Bowers was no longer out there. Mm-hmm. A-plus blocker, A-plus route runner. You know, he could be the second weapon on a team. Like the way that, you know, I don't want to just like assume – if Lockett's gone, you can assume JSN can kind of take over some of those responsibilities. And then you can work with Bowers out of the slot as like your next weapon. Being multiple, you know, he is one of the best blockers in terms of,
that's fascinating to me because he's only listed at what, 240.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's light of frame, but man, he is so strong. Like you can see him one-on-one against an edge and just like stonewall him, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like, if you believe in being multiple and flexible and like lots of movement, like I know Grubb does, I know they would love Bowers. One of the specialties of the Washington offense was how many screens they ran. And I can tight end screens even. Devin Culp would catch those. And being able to do that with someone as explosive as Brock Bowers is just like tantalizing. So like, I don't think tight end in the first is a great value. in terms of generally what you, because you have to think about it as if they're signed for 4 years and maybe five, right? If it all works out, what's the value opposed to what they're getting paid at free agency?
Yeah.
And so I think Bowers, if he was picked at 16, would be like the ninth or 10th highest paid tight end in the NFL.
That's
as
crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
And so like how much excess value are you getting there compared to if you took Brian Thomas, he would be what I'm making this up, but like the 60th, the 80th highest paid wide receiver, who knows? Right. And so the excess value of what they cost. So high. But I think Bowers is that special. And I don't think he's going to be there at 16. I do think a team could trade up and even grab him 14, 13, you know, especially Cincinnati. Could definitely see them just jumping up.
I suspect if he's still on the board there at 16, that works in the Seahawks' favor. I think that could be a real pivot point for any team wanting to come up and get him. That could really lend some leverage if they want to try to maximize their value in moving back. The tackle position is fascinating to me because it's really good. Like you see this group of guys in your top 32 and even just outside of it with Jordan Morgan there. And it's, you know, we're all waiting to see what's going on with Abraham Lucas. And John Schneider gave us our most positive report, you know, a couple of weeks ago that we've had in a while, where he said he fully expects him to be ready by week one. Mm-hmm. What that means, we don't know. You know, how ready is he? Is he 100%? Is it fixed? Is it a chronic thing? There was so much mystery surrounding that last year because Pete was just so evasive in trying to describe it. And so there's been talk about, well, you can move Lucas inside, whether or not, you know, that would work or not. He's never played that position, but it just, I can't get away from the idea that whenever they're on the board, they might look up and one of these guys is really, really highly graded and at the top of their board and best player available. They might just take this guy because they think he's going to be a blue chip player and let those chips kind of fall where they may with Lucas. You know, that scenario, could you see that scenario unfolding where tackle's the choice, even if they're optimistic that Lucas can come back?
Yeah, I think if they are actually optimistic about Lucas, they don't do it. I think having offensive tackles that are on rookie deals, you don't try to replace those people.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you really think Lucas can kick inside, which like a lot of people did, especially pre-draft, but he's been great at tackle for when he's healthy, when he's playing, like you don't want to replace that. And so that's why so many people mock Troy Fautanu too, because they're like, oh, sure, he can be an elite guard. And then if something happens with Lucas, you can kick him out. Like I understand the flexibility and I get it. I don't think, like, can they do it? Definitely. And if they do, I think that means that they're not optimistic about Lucas. And I kind of felt that after the Fant signing as well, because I thought Fant was a tier above what you would sign if you were actually, you know, if you were drafting him to be your swing backup.
Right.
Fant was mostly trying to
replace Stone Forsythe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think if they do it, that means they are not optimistic about Lucas. Mm-hmm. And we should, you know, NFL teams aren't always honest about injuries and things.
Yeah.
So I would read it.
It could also be a tell that they do plan to try Lucas at guard. And to your point, while he's never played it, he was exclusively a right tackle at Washington State. You know, I went back recently and looked for some reports and I saw right on NFL.com, Lance Zierlein said, thinks he could project a guard. And then he quoted an anonymous scout in the league who said the same thing. So there is at least that thought that he might be able to make that transition.
Is that the kind of guard the Seahawks want if they are relying on Bradford? And like, we don't know.
We don't know. There's this assumption that they want movers.
Right.
Right. And that they want more athletic guys that can get out and pull. It's something Seahawks haven't had. Certainly wasn't Damian Lewis's strength. And it might play into the fact we've been so terrible at screens for the last however many years. But then they go out and they look at Laken Tomlinson, who doesn't fit that profile at all. Mm-mm. So, no. Yeah. We have no idea. This draft is going to be a really nice point in our education of how this regime is going to operate. Edge is getting a lot of attention lately because they bring Chop Robinson in for a visit. They met with some of these guys at the combine as well. Jared Verse coming in for a visit. He's a guy that I mocked a million times last year before he decided he was going to stay at Florida State. Because the assumption was after the big year in 22, he was going to come out. Again, this is another position where fans might not think it's a need just because there's so many bodies there and guys that have been taken pretty high in the draft. But this might be the best example of all the position groups of simply taking best player available if one of these guys falls into your hands.
Yeah, totally. Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, both happy happy in quotes, we'll say, if you stick at 16 and get them. Obviously would prefer to a small trade back in the 20s or something. I think edge, it's not a primary need, but there's no such thing as too many. Like you can always draft one every year and be happy that you drafted one, because you always need them. There's always injuries.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a primary need for Seattle, but I'm excited if they take the right person at the right spot. I love Chop Robinson. He's the one that was my last cut from the top 16 okay. as I was kind of moving things. So I'm higher on him than most. A lot of people love Liatu. I have my reservations about whether what he does. Like, he's such a technician. He's so good with his hands. He mm-hmm. always has a plan. He knows how to counter. I worry about those that just need to engage in hand fighting. I prefer those that just like blow by people. So I prefer the athleticism of Chop Robinson, even though he had four sacks last year, I think. So it's a personal preference. And that's why, you know, when you look within a bucket, I have them my rankings, but I don't actually like fight too much about where they are within the bucket.
Okay. Darius Robinson's fascinating to me because all the measurables are there. You know, he didn't test as explosively at the combine as some people had hoped, but as far as height, weight and the production's there, he's played defensive tackle and edge. He's a big dude, really impressive interviews. Like he came off, I was watching some of his combine interviews a week or so ago and thought, oh God, he talks like a Seahawk. Right.
Yeah.
Kind of reminiscent of Derek Hall and just his demeanor and how mm-hmm. he carries himself and everything. But he's not as twitchy as you would like. There's some question about where his fit would be. And then somebody ruined it for me the other day by saying he's kind of like L.J. Collier in that sense. Right.
Oof.
And I just can't get that out of my head now. But
yeah,
there is a thought that they might be hunting for bigger edges, and edge is such a, you know, kind of a blurred term these days. It could mean 3-4 defensive end, which is something that, you know, that they don't have a lot of youth on that roster. Darius Robinson, was he at the bottom of your top 32 or was he a little bit higher?
Yeah, he's kind of near the bottom of my top 32. I kind of was moving. So I had Junior Colson up, and then I kind of at the last minute switched Colson and Robinson just as I was thinking about it and where the value is. I guess I just kind of believe the people that think Colson will be there in the 50s or later second, whereas everyone is pretty much on Robinson's going earlier. And so if I think about it in the context of like, I don't know everything, and on some level you have to trust what you hear. I guess it has to be Darius Robinson because he just feels very Seahawky, tough up the middle.
He does.
Big, long, the way that he talks, like everything you mentioned, he just feels like it. So he was one of my last switches from 32 to 48.
When the Seahawks gave Daryl Taylor another deal instead of just tendering him, it's virtually no guaranteed money. They could cut him today and get almost all the money that they've committed to him back. Does that, when you look at this edge class, after the top 32, there's a real drop off into some guys, you know, with a lot of questions, right? Do you see a scenario where if they go edge early, if they get Chop Robinson, do you think there might be a market for Daryl Taylor? It's not going to get you much, but he might get you a day 3 pick or a future pick even from these teams that just don't see the value and think that the upside of a Daryl Taylor who's played 4 years in the league already might exceed what they might get later on.
I don't know, because Daryl Taylor, like when he was coming out, was, you know, marked as like, oh, that's going to be a Seahawks target. Just the twitchy, just the way he was. This was like the definition of a team that would draft that player. Right. And so if, when I see that and they're giving up on them, it would give me pause. Hmm. Right. And so I don't think there would be, I think they would play chicken and see if we release him.
Yeah,
we as in okay. Seahawks. So
yeah, and, or let him compete because it doesn't cost you anything to keep him, you know, for another couple of months. Defensive tackle. Talk about a group that really drops off. There's only two guys, and you've got him here in your top 16, and Johnny Newton and Byron Murphy. Very, very popular Seahawk mock draft trade targets. And then there's a lot of question marks after that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It does that, the fact that there's only two up there, because John says, as much as, you know, so much has been made out of him saying best player available, we don't draft for need. But then he said something a couple of weeks ago that I'm not sure it got as much traction as it did with me, where he says, but, oh, by the way, we incorporate positional need into the grade.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, these guys are both mostly probably three technique types. There's a lot more depth on that defensive line now than there was certainly a year ago. And it's a pretty good looking group. You've got Newton slightly ahead of Murphy. Why?
Yeah. I really like both. Like, you can switch either one. If I could have them equal, I would. Right. They are slightly different players to me. Murphy, slider. Murphy really reminds me of, who was that defensive tackle from the Bengals for all those years? I have a buddy that's a Bengals fan who's going to kill me right now out of Oklahoma. All those years was a Pro Bowler, a little undersized, went to Tampa Bay at the end of his career. But so I love Murphy. I think that guy, like the fact that they would line him up at nose instead of Sweat sometimes because they trusted his ability to get past the center and get pressure just shows, like, I have no doubts. Both of them are great. I came into the season with Newton as my number one guy, and I was like, I'm going to have to be convinced he's not number one. To like move him just because he was so dominant, especially, you know, last year. And so I don't think Murphy got there, but it's like either one of those, you are very happy if you're looking for a defensive tackle.
Now, T'Vondre Sweat, the only mountain of a man in this draft, the only obvious, like, true gap plugging nose tackle in this draft, a guy that fans would love to see in a Seahawk uniform. Came in for a visit, I think, yesterday, or he's coming in this week, even after the news broke over the weekend that he got a DWI. That appointment may have been made before that happened. It likely was.
Right.
And they're just going through with it to allow him to explain what happened. But you said you did slide him down your board after the news broke, right?
Yeah, I did. He's one of the toughest ones for me just because he's... the NFL doesn't typically draft players who only play two downs at most, right? And especially as it becoming more of a passing league, is it one and a half downs? You know, how many downs is he going to be playing? How much are you going to be rotating him? And how much value is that if someone's playing only 40% of your defensive snaps, 60% of your defensive snaps, opposed to trying to get a starter at another position? So I have him in my top 64 bucket. I think his size and athleticism and ability, he could go earlier, but the NFL trend is just those players don't go as early as you think they will.
Yeah.
Every year they have those and they drop a little bit. So
Jaren Reed's a good example. Really good example. Yeah. Fell into the second round because he was known more as a run stopper, and Seahawks took advantage of that.
Yeah. And I will say, in the NFC West, you do need run stoppers, right? Like the Rams love to run, you know, everyone in the NFC West to win the NFC West. I think you do need players that are big like that. So, I think he's still on the Seahawks board. I'm not surprised he's out for a visit. I also think, it was probably prearranged and just bad timing that he got the DWI. Good timing for Seattle to understand what it is. And that guy is, if you listen to any of his interviews, he is a joy. Like, he is fun. He's serious, but not too serious. And sometimes teams like that, but it is a little aloof, which can turn off teams as well. I don't know how Mike McDonald is going to approach that. Is he very Harbaugh business serious, or is he more the sometimes Harbaugh is goofy, right?
Yeah,
we don't know enough of how much they're going to factor that in, because as he's tough and he talks tough, but he's also very fun to listen to.
And then some of these guys farther down on your list, the Seahawks have met with or are meeting with. Braden Fiss they met with at the Combine. McKinley Jackson they've met with. If you could pick one name, if they don't go defense tackle early, if Murphy or Newton isn't the pick, do you have like a favorite or two that would be good value later on?
Yeah. I love Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. He's tough. He tested so much better than I thought he was going to test.
Yeah.
I think he can inside outside, kind of like what we were talking about with Darius Robinson as well, but he's more, it's more stout in the run. So I really, really like Michael Hall Jr. I have a hard time understanding where he's going because the people that really like Michael Hall really like Michael Hall Jr. Right. And then yeah. you read people that have him third, fourth range. They have him after pick 100. And like when I watch it, it just like jumps out at me at that he should be an earlier pick. So he's one that's kind of tough for me to figure out exactly where he is. But like,
is that just the weight? Maybe, you know, I've seen, you know, he's 280 ish. It's just kind of tough for some teams to wrap their head around that.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Who was the kid last year out of Pittsburgh, went to Tampa Bay, the undersized defensive tackle all the Seahawks fans wanted us to draft?
Why is it escaping me?
Yeah, me too. It's, you get to know a draft class so well, and then you have to flush it and move on to the next one.
Kancey.
Yeah, Kalijah Kancey. Yeah,
that's there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that similar play style?
Yeah, I could see that. I think that's a good call.
Okay.
Kancey was even smaller, but... Yeah, I mean, and I actually don't know how he did for Tampa Bay this year. So I don't know if that
was
a hit.
I think he was hurt early, and then by the end of the season, there was a lot of optimism about him, a lot of excitement about how he played. Yeah. Let's talk about linebackers, because this one is fascinating. Obviously, it's a need, right? They go out and they get Terrell Dotson and Jerome Baker, two guys that I'm really excited to see play, but they're both on one-year deals. You know, the thought being, all right, let's see them spend the year competing to see who gets the extension offer, right? So you've got to come away from this draft, in my opinion, with at least one guy. And I wouldn't even be mad if they doubled down and get some guys on rookie contracts that we can count on moving forward. It's just such a question of what style of linebacker. Arjun Manon just posted a sortable graph today that I thought was fascinating. He goes back to 2011 and he looks at height, weight, speed, athletic testing numbers. And you can sort it, right? The Seahawks since 2011 are second highest in the league in the weight of their linebackers. Like they have traditionally drafted the second heaviest linebackers in the league. Yet the Baltimore Ravens have been the eighth lightest linebacker drafting team, of which Mike McDonald has been a part of that for, right? So you look at your two top linebackers, Edgerrin Cooper's 230 at 6'2", Junior Colson's pushing 250, even though he's only 21 years old. We just don't know, do we?
No, we really don't. And we don't know exactly how many of the linebackers they signed do they want to have for more than 1 year, and they couldn't, right? We don't know.
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of dissect what they need, which is why it's really interesting for me diving in this year, because a lot of times we were so familiar with the scheme and how they want to utilize it and what they need. And so that's why this year for me is so exciting. And it made it exceptionally difficult to rank the linebackers for me, because I didn't know exactly how they're going to use what they signed. Even like they're flexible too. So, hard for me to understand exactly where to go. So I just kind of went by my own rankings.
What is it you like about Cooper that had you put him ahead of Colson? You mentioned earlier you just moved Colson out of the top 32 recently.
Yeah. Cooper's just like the definition of a run and hit linebacker. If you like those that just like get through the trash and really can deliver some hits, he's less coverage, right? When he's working side to side, he's a little less, you know, he's not Junior Colson. He's a will. He's a will that, you know, the phrase when Mike McDonald said like blitzing has to be everyone, right? Like when he kind of mentioned, you know, I'm paraphrasing that, it really like set some things off in my mind of what I think they want out of their linebackers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they struggled when the Ravens had Patrick Queen until they had a reliable Mike next to him in Roquan Smith. And so does that mean actually, they want the Junior Colson type, who's like the only Mike linebacker that I'm comfortable will start from day one, right? And Colson started for Mike McDonald as a freshman at Michigan. So, you know, is it more likely they go Colson than the run and hit linebacker? Like, possibly. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
It's interesting. Maybe it's a tell that they've also met with Nathaniel Watson, because he's really the only other guy in this draft that's 245.
Right.
So maybe Watson is their hedge if they can't get Colson. I thought this was interesting, an interesting topic today, because the Ringer came out with a mock draft that had a scenario in it that I've kind of been warning people about for a little while. And that is not necessarily related specifically to the linebacker position. You can take any other if you wish. But he had him trading all the way down to 32 with Kansas City. A little extreme for me, but just the idea they might trade down significantly is a possibility. And then because they don't have a second round pick and it might not even have one after a trade down. It takes a pretty aggressive one to get that pick based on the charts, that it's not so much about just taking the best player on your board, but also looking at these tiers and considering what's next. And if one of these guys is near the top of their board and he had him going Edger and Cooper, I suggested I could see the scenario, but maybe Colson. It would, you know, people just hate the idea of linebackers in the first round nowadays anyway. But it would certainly make some sense to me simply because if they feel like that's a player they got to have in the program, and then they see the black hole that comes after it, right? It would be considered a reach at that point by most. But I could see it happening.
I can see it happening so much that I may have bet some money on a plus 10,000 linebacker as the first pick for the Seahawks.
Yeah, okay.
So just after money a couple where trade backs. Exactly. So I totally think it's possible. I mean, like how far back do they have to go? Like 25? You know, if they trade with, I think it's Dallas, 25 and 50 something for 16.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. You know, he's in my top 32, Cooper, and like Colson was just on the edge. And I would not be upset if Colson made it in either.
You're never going to make all fans happy. Yeah, but but I could certainly, it's not going to happen at 16. But if they trade back a couple of times or one, you know, make a pretty big drop, man, I could see it. Especially because I think there would be a plan where, you know, maybe Cooper more than Colson, you know, but where you could get all three of those guys on the field at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then we're going to finish with the secondary. I don't think a lot needs to be said about safety. You know, they've got some guys there that they like, but certainly I expect them at some point in the draft to add one of these guys. It's a solid group, but there aren't any that are really projected as a first round pick, as you have reflected here. But I do want to talk about corner, because I think last year I spent months, and you probably did too, debating people on the fact that, yeah, they could go corner at 5.
Yeah.
But we'd never taken any corner earlier than the 3rd round, I think. So why would we now? It would blow people's minds if they went corner in back-to-back years. But when you start to look at all the mock drafts and the position runs that are going to happen with the quarterbacks going first, then the tackles, then teams are going to start getting in on those wide receivers. It's going to push some of these good corners down. And we don't know how they're going to use these guys. I talked to Paul Moyer on Monday, and he suggested he thinks Witherspoon should stay in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
In which case, they might very well be looking at someone else to put on the outside and lock down a boundary. TJ Kool-Aid McKinstry is obviously a big name. You know, early in the process, he was maybe the number one corner until things started to sort themselves out.
Yeah.
You have TJ Tampa ahead of him. I haven't watched any TJ Tampa tape. I'm intrigued. Tell me about him.
Yeah. Don't watch the game against, I think it was Kansas State, where it was like completely snowy and you couldn't see anyone's numbers or anything. He's tough, man. Like when I think, you know, it's hard to think about what corner means for the Seahawks going forward, because so much of it, I assume, was in Pete Carroll's vision.
Yeah.
Right. And so how much is that going to change? And so for me, TJ Tampa, I am higher on him than most. Most see him as a solidly second rounder. I think he's more of a first just because I have no doubts he can do everything, right? He's sticky. I guess I should start off. He's solidly 6 foot 190. So I like that. He's good size. He can play inside and out. I think the Seahawks really need a cornerback. And I know that's controversial because like Reek Woolen made a Pro Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Witherspoon made it last year. But as you're talking to Moyer, like that's the exact same thought that I had. I think Witherspoon's blitzing ability is unreal. It might be one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. And the more you play him outside, the harder it is to do that.
Hmm.
And so, and again, I go back to what McDonald said is like, everyone has to be able to blitz, right? Like we want it coming from anywhere and everywhere. And if that's the case, then you probably don't want him outside. You probably want him playing the slot where he was elite and most of the offenses, especially in our division, play 3 wide all the time, right? So
it's one of the reasons I love Cooper DeJean as a prospect.
Yes.
Absolutely love him and would not blink an eye if the Seahawks took him. It's just that I think if they plan to play Witherspoon inside, I think that's DeJean's best fit too. And so I think that might be a little redundant, unless their idea is, well, we take him and he can play there, and then we keep Witherspoon on the outside.
Yeah, it would be a Witherspoon insurance, maybe, if there's an injury, because he is slider, that you don't have to change your scheme too much if you can slide Cooper in. And like both of them can play outside as well. Mm-hmm. Like I have no doubts on Witherspoon. Witherspoon was my first choice for the Seahawks last year. I had plenty of tweets out there talking about how I wanted him over Will Anderson. He was my guy. And that's Quinyon Mitchell this year.
Yeah, like, I've seen those comps. Yeah.
Man, like if you want like the swag that Witherspoon brought, right? Like that tenacity, that's Quinyon Mitchell as well. And so to me, like the dream of having just those two, like, you know, we all think back of the swag of the LOB and like what they provided. I'm never going to compare to like what that was just because it was so special. Sure. But like Mitchell is that guy.
Yeah.
Like I knew Witherspoon would be.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me that in, you know, you put on his college tape and he's playing so far off the ball. Like he never played bump and run or press coverage. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl and he looks like he's been playing it his whole life.
And everyone wanted to challenge him. Like at the end of practice, they let an offensive guy choose a defensive guy and let them go at it. And everyone wanted to challenge Mitchell every single time. And like, he was talking trash the entire time. And I love that. That's what I want out of my corners. And like, I was like, okay, he's going to be my CB1. And then as I was looking, I used to have as a top 7 and then a top 16. And so Mitchell was the last one that I moved. And then I just like the symmetry of it all being like divisible by 8 basically. So I switched it, but like, yeah, he's my favorite prospect in this entire draft.
And then there's one specific corner I want to ask you about, because when I put on the tape, I saw some Devin Witherspoon in him too. Just his ability to, his willingness to come up and hit and seek guys out and play physical and love to play press when he got the opportunity. But then he ran a 40 that wasn't great at the combine. Give me your thoughts on Ennis Reikes Straw Jr.
Yeah, as straightforward as sometimes it's hard to evaluate corners. The games you watch and how they go. Many people had Reikes Straw in the first round before he started testing. And so often, like, I hear how important is testing for cornerbacks, right? Because a lot of the testing isn't showing, like, a lot of the action happens in the first few seconds of a play. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a lot of the testing is making up distance. And so it's very much a back and forth. Now I know people that are very high on Reikes Straw and would probably flip Reikes Straw, or actually probably Wiggins in Tampa, and then probably move Reikes Straw up. I'm lower on Wiggins just because of his size. Like I don't like corners that don't tackle in our division.
He's so skinny.
And yeah, he's so small. But Reikes Straw, again, he does everything reasonably well. And I was surprised at how poorly he tested, because he doesn't show that. Like, he doesn't have the long speed that a lot of people want. But if you're worried about playing in a phone booth and tackling, he's great. He's great. Like, no complaints. It's just so many people put a high preference on cornerback testing, and then some don't care as much. 'Cause like, you know, but his long speed, it really is lacking that.
It's
crazy.
That's
what I got out of most of it.
Yeah. It's got to be the hardest part about trying to evaluate these guys is reconciling what you see on tape versus what you see in Indianapolis. You know, the Seahawks, it just came out yesterday, they've met with Cameron Kitchens, safety out of Miami, right? A guy that, you know, has kind of fallen off. He was considered at one point to be the number one safety in this class. You watch him on tape, and he's sideline to sideline. Like, he's, you know, they move him all around, but he's playing middle third a lot of the times and playing center field, and he's having no trouble pursuing guys and getting to the sidelines. And then he goes and he runs a 4.6 in Indianapolis, you know, and you're like, what the hell? That's not what I see on tape. That's the toughest thing, right?
I am the least confident in my corner, especially the top 100 down those rankings. Like, I feel pretty confident in the second rounder, and I'm pretty happy with how my safeties are laid out, but the cornerbacks, man, like for Seattle and what they need, I just had to keep thinking, like, does this person start over Mike Jackson? Does he start over Trey Brown? And what is it actually they want?
Yeah.
Right. And there's not a lot of information there for me, except for, like, I know they have to tackle well. If they don't tackle well, I cannot imagine Mike McDonald grabbing them. So I tend to lower those corners.
Let's finish on this. Yesterday when you posted this, you laid out your ideal 3-round draft scenario. Share that with us.
Yeah. So for me, it has to be a trade down. And so when I started, like, where doesn't matter as much. Mid-20s to me is still wonderful. And that gives you an opportunity to grab an Edgerrin Cooper or someone higher, like Johnny Newton or Byron Murphy. There are mocks where they are available in the 20s. And so I'm basically like, although I called out, this is my ideal. And I think if I remember correctly, it was Cooper DeJean and like pick 25 or something like that.
Yeah.
I love DeJean. You love DeJean. We talked about him. Flex, you know, can play safety. I don't think he's going to be a safety. A lot of people do. I think he can stick a corner, can play inside, outside, just a dynamic returner. Freak athlete, like next level freak athlete.
Yeah. So, you saw the basketball highlights that came out this week, right? That made the rounds on Twitter. Yeah. Like, dude, yeah. It's easy to fall in love with that athleticism.
Yeah. So, if you can grab someone in my top 16 bucket, like for me, it was DeJean, but it could easily be, you know, Johnny Newton or Byron Murphy. They're completely happy. I do think taking the cornerback earlier, because I think the drop off is real, but that might just be like my sense of my ability to rank them.
Yeah.
Right. So a little bit, but Cooper DeJean was my first pick, and then being able to pull linebacker after the trade back. So in this scenario, it was 16 and we got 24 and 56. And I think I had to give up like a future pick or something. But when you do the simulators, like no one cares about future picks.
Right.
And so being able to get a linebacker, Peyton Wilson, to me, it's like the top three linebackers, as you can see on my board, are definitely like segmented from the rest.
Yeah.
So if we left with a corner and a linebacker, and then my third pick, I finally went guard. I went Dominic Pooney, who I was exceptionally happy to get a guard. That's the sweet spot. To me, it's like between pick 75 and 100, roughly, that's where you want to take an offensive lineman. When we hired Mike McDonald, I really switched from thinking offense to defense for what Seattle's going to do. Like, you don't hire the defensive whiz kid to stop the, you know, crazy offenses in your division and then not give him the tools he needs to be successful.
Yeah.
So to me, it was very much like, where are we weakest on the team? And it's the back half. It's linebacker and it's corner, defensive back. After we signed our safeties, you know, safety need kind of got pushed down. And so when people see Cooper DeJean, they're like, oh, is he going to be the next safety? But I'm like, no, he can play outside and you're going to be great.
Yeah.
So after that, then it's if you can pull one of the D tackles, there are a couple of D tackles I think are going to be around pick 100 that I have. I have Mason Smith, who is out of LSU and is one of the top recruits in the nation. And then he never really delivered after his freshman season. He got hurt. There's some question on character there. I'd never try to dive too much into that, 'cause like, I don't know. But you can also get Dwayne Carter out of Duke, McKinley.
No
Jackson,
questions
like,
about
like,
his character. Yeah. Three-time captain, I think. Yeah.
That guy's unreal. So I think you can get a defensive tackle around pick 100 if you don't get one early. Right. And I love there's like the two different gaps to me. It's like mid to late second is where you'll see probably Chris Jenkins, Braden Fisk, like that group, which I like all of them. They're significantly different. And at the end, I think you can still get starters in the top 100. Hmm. So it's just kind of like finding out the right puzzle pieces. So to me, if they leave in their first four picks and they get one at each level of the defense, I'm going to be happy, because I want to give Mike McDonald the right, it's rude to call him toys, but like the right players to do what he wants to do.
I think that's a really important point that I think some people are missing. And I even forget, you know, and take it for granted at times, because there are players that you fall in love with that if you see him on the board there at 16, man, you're going to be able to squint and imagine what it would look like to have that player on the roster. But given that it's Mike McDonald's first year, you have to give him as many possibilities, right? As many bites at the apple as you can to try and fit guys into his scheme. And that's why I think at the end of the day, you know, unless there's just nothing there, I think they trade down. I've said it, you know, I don't know about setting the over under. Maybe I'd put it at 9.5. I think they come away from this draft with at least 9 picks at the end of it.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, it kills me we don't have a second rounder in this draft. Just what the meat's there. I mean, like, I love Leonard Williams. I'm glad we re-signed him. And I think he's actually going to be pretty important for what we're going forward. But, man, it hurts. As a draft nerd, like, it hurts not having that.
Yeah.
But if we can trade back into the 20s, even if it's late 20s, and get one, there's going to be – the one thing is we need good players. Seahawks need good players at every level of the defense. And anywhere in the first round, there will be multiple of those. And so everyone's, this is why, like, if the first pick is not defense, I'm probably pretty upset.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, and I'm with you. I've done, you know, a million mocks, and when I take an offensive lineman early, I just don't ever really love the way that it goes after that. And so it just seems to work better. And it's, you know, we got spoiled the last couple of years as people who love running these simulators. You know, we go from multiple second rounders and multiple first rounders to none. Yeah. That's been a tough pill to swallow. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back and they pick up a second rounder next year and they don't recoup one this year, because it is to me like a multiple year vision.
Absolutely.
And so that will leave me a little upset with how much work and what I think of the second round of this class. But I totally think it's possible.
Yeah, I could see that too. Man, I appreciate all your time. This was a lot of fun. Love talking with fellow draft nerds, and I appreciate all the hard work you put into this, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. If you don't mind, I'm going to tell you one story.
Yeah,
I went to the NFL draft in 2010, the year that we drafted Earl Thomas and Russell Okung.
And
I went to New York. I've been an NFL draft nerd since like 2004, basically. And so that year, it was like, if I know people are like, what do you do with the draft? What is it? Why do you go?
Right.
And it was one of the most fun experiences I've ever been. And every year since then, I've been like, oh, I should try to get some friends together, get to go. And what they did is, I'm sure it's changed now because 2010 was actually a long time ago and I'm old. But they gave you like an earpiece where you could switch between the NFL Network and the ESPN broadcast.
Really?
So you could hear what was happening. Yeah. And you could see each stage in Radio City Music Hall, like one to the right, one to the left, and you could see the stage and you could just click a button to hear the broadcast. So people are like, oh, you're just sitting there not knowing what's going on, but you're actually like listening to the draft while you're there, hanging out with thousands of football fans of different, you know, teams, and you're hanging out. And I had like a swag bag afterwards that I got signed by like Golden Tate from that draft. And it's just one of those things that like people are like, what is it? And they give you, well, they used to. I don't know what they do now. Maybe they just expect everyone.
Well, now,
to
yeah, watch you just phone. Exactly yeah. right.
But you watch, and I just remember when the Eagles traded up, they all thought it was for Earl Thomas, and they started chanting Earl Thomas. And I was on Twitter, and you know, at this time when almost no, and I saw that it wasn't. And when I told them that like they traded up and it wasn't Earl, and they were devastated. And like I used to write about how I wanted the Seahawks to take either Trent Williams or Eric Berry. And then I wanted Dez Bryant on the way back. And like, wow. You know, we didn't end up getting those, but God, it's
time
just
flies.
Like, yeah.
You didn't, you didn't want Taylor Mays like everybody else?
No, I was not a Taylor Mays guy. But it was like, if you ever have the chance to go to the draft, you just find people who are actually as interested in football and your own teams. And you can have like, we went out every single night until and got pizza at like 2 a.m. afterwards and hung out with just random football fans talking football about their teams. And it was like one of the best times. So this is my endorsement for anyone. It's a little late if you're planning flights to Detroit to go, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, gosh, I think, you know, there've been rumors that we've made bids or whatever. I think it'd be great to have it here in the Pacific Northwest one of these days. I think they could really put on a nice event. It's funny to hear those things too, because I'm still old school. They're over there on the kitchen counter right now. Every year I get Athlons and Lindy's, you know, I like having that physical magazine, even though they're done way too early. Although, I will give Lindy's credit. They waited until after the combine this year to produce theirs. Maybe a tip of the cap to all the virtual, you know, online, like the Beast and all those other draft guides that come out now that are so much more current. Thank you for all the work you put into this, man. I appreciate you having you on the show, and let's get you back after the draft. So we can get your thoughts on how it all fell out.
Love it. Sounds great.
All right. Can't get enough of that. Another long-ish one, but really wanted to go through his board in detail. What do you think? What do you think of his rankings? You can look him up on Twitter, or I think I retweeted those earlier today. If you want to take a closer look at that board, I know that, as I said on the show, it's a little small to try and see it on the YouTube screen. What do you think about the trade back idea? What do you think about his ideal scenario? What do you think about the Ringer mock draft today, where they trade all the way to the end of the first round but take a linebacker, knowing that the run on that group at the top of the linebacker market is going to happen in the second round, and you're not going to have any of those guys left when you pick again? Give me your thoughts, your ideas. We're going to do a show coming up here before the draft where I take your mock drafts. We'll do a viewer mock draft. And I won't mock the mocks, but I'll give you my honest assessment of them. And we'll talk about some of those ideas. So if you want to get those ready, start doing it now. I'll announce soon on Twitter when that will happen. Coming up later this week, tomorrow, I'm talking with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, outstanding Seahawks beat writer. We'll get his thoughts on the offseason so far. Seahawks had some press conferences. Some players spoke today at VMAC. We'll get his thoughts on some of those comments. And then next week on Monday, Shane Hallam, a draft analyst who's been doing 7-round mock drafts and producing a draft guide for our draft rankings for many, many years. One of the first guys I followed on Twitter. It'll be fun to talk with him and so much more coming up. So make sure you hit that bell button so you don't miss any episodes. Till next time, I am Dan. Follow me at Seahawks Forever on Twitter. Forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching.